From UFOs to psychic powers and government conspiracies, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now or learn the stuff they don't want you to know. A production of iHeartRadio.
Hello, welcome back to the show. My name is Matt.
My name is Noel.
They call me Ben. We are joined, as always, with our super producer, Alexis, codenamed Doc Holliday Jackson. Most importantly, you are you, you are here, and that makes this Stuff They Don't Want You to Know. It's the top of the week, which means it's time for our strange news segment, and we have some doozies here, actually. Before we started rolling, we were talking back and forth about some of the difficulties we had just getting this down to three stories. Several of these may be familiar, but it's going to be very strange if you are already aware of all three. So I got to say, Noel, as soon as you told us about your story for today, I was torn, man, because my first reaction was, this is terrible and frightening. And my second reaction was, this would look so cool in a sci-fi film.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, it's probably something we've seen in sci-fi films. It makes me think of Terminator 2 when you see that epic scene of the actual Terminator exoskeletons crushing skulls, you know, with their giant bulldozer things. And there's these flying like UAV looking things with, you know, mounted laser cannons, one would assume. This is sort of like that, only like, you know, a little more grounded in what I guess passes for reality these days. There's an article in express.co.uk. The headline really says it all. British Army unveils first shotgun-armed drone, which uses AI to take down enemies, wait for it, indoors.
Wow, combat drones.
It's exactly right, Matt, close combat drones. And you sort of think to yourself, like, well, that seems like a thing that they would have already done, or that somebody would have already had this idea. It doesn't seem particularly unique. But it turns out that drones need open spaces to fly efficiently because of a lot of things, because of, you know, bumping into stuff, but also just air current. And apparently indoors in close quarters, walls actually disrupt the airflow in such a way that can cause the drones to become unwieldy when they fly. And the British Army is working with a company to develop these particularly sophisticated drones that are armed with two double barrel shotguns that can fly indoors. And the one really important use for this would be, let's say you've breached the walls of an enemy stronghold of some kind, and you want to send folks in, like, you know, SWAT style, or you kick in the doors and do all the cool hand movements and all that stuff, and, you know, throwing up the different signals and flanking and whatnot. And that's when a lot of people die, because you're going into unknown territory and there's usually people waiting, you know, fully armed to take you out. And so you're kind of at a disadvantage there. With these little guys, you can send them in ahead to scout the thing, because they'd be equipped with cameras too, but they're also equipped with close range blasters, essentially, that can take some of these enemy combatants down, literally.
I gotta say, I fully retract my earlier statement about this being cool in a sci-fi sense, because I was thinking of something different that maybe will happen. I initially, in my head, was thinking of a drone that would be small enough to be mounted on a shotgun or another firearm, such that you could shoot discharge the firearm, and then if someone is running away, you can click another trigger, and then a drone goes after them to monitor them. That's what I was thinking.
Nested drones.
That is imaginative, my friend. I like that. That sounds like something out of like an anime or maybe Total Recall or something. That's super cool.
These are drones with firearms
attached to them. They have six rotors, and it uses a combination of AI and sort of more advanced physics to stay in the air in these small rooms. They don't say exactly how it does it, but a lot of these drones that we're talking about, even the smaller ones, deal with a phenomenon that is very affectionately referred to as wall suck. which is that thing I was talking about earlier, which can cause drones with heavier payloads or carrying heavier equipment to crash because of the way the air is displaced when they're indoors.
That makes sense. I've seen there are other drones that have that kind of weaponry. I think Russia's as reported by The Verge, specifically does have a drone with a literal shotgun mounted on the frame. But that thing, I think, would, just from the shape of it, looks like it would be vulnerable to wall suck, like you're describing. And it's meant, at least officially, to hunt down other drones. But with this, I think from the design you're describing, that those multiple rotors give it much more, I guess, agility, freedom of movement, and it can work with that lack of air currents. Because you're right, a lot of these, especially the ones that seem kind of designed almost like paper planes or a stereotypical plane, a lot of those feel like they have to have a ton of open space, which just would render them useless indoors. So this is, technologically speaking, this is a great breakthrough. But what do you, I mean, what do you think is going to happen? Are they, so they're announcing these, they've unveiled them, but do they have a timeline of when they're coming out?
Yeah, we were trying, we were all three of us trying to find some footage or like a prototype photo or something. And it doesn't seem like it's at that level. This may, I don't know if this is announced or if this is like a leak or something, but there's a couple articles about it. This one on Gizmodo has a little bit more info. It's something that's being, spearheaded by the United Kingdom Strategic Command, which is the agency that supports the Ministry of Defense. And they are the company that is developing these battle drones has remained unnamed. But we do know that the model number under development is something called the I-9, and that it is operated by a person with a remote control. And the AI, in addition to helping maintain the equilibrium indoors, also identifies targets. So it essentially has like predator vision on board, kind of targeting capabilities, I'm assuming with some kind of infrared or some ability, you know, night vision or what have you, you know, for different situations.
Is that, there's an article in the Times that has, I think maybe it's a picture of the drone.
Is it the I-9 with the six, the hexacopter? Because I think that's just an example of a hexacopter drone. But I haven't looked at, I haven't looked at the Times. I was looking at Forbes. This thing is being reported all over the place. But it, again, it's in slightly different ways. And maybe it's just because some of the reporting is bringing in mention of several other types of drones and several other companies. So it's a little confusing as to whether or not they are naming the company or not, but it in several of them, it does say an as of yet to be named company.
That's right. That's what I'm seeing too. And this wouldn't be the only purpose for this thing. The indoor close combat stuff, it could actually be used to knock other drones out of the sky. And there could be other models that replace these dual shotguns with a small rocket launcher or a chain gun, which I believe is kind of like an automatic machine gun type situation, isn't it?
Yeah, a chain gun is insane.
Like a Gatling gun, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The craziest thing to me is that whatever AI they're using to control the actual stabilization of the vehicle, like that's got to be so robust to be able to fire something with so much force and still be flying in the air enough for a human pilot to continue to pilot it, because you just imagine the shake that would occur if you've
blasted backwards against the wall, you know.
The recoil resistance is clearly one of the primary breakthroughs, I think, from a programming and an engineering perspective. But the thing is that, is regardless of how smart a drone can be, we have to remember that a shotgun is dumb and bullets are dumb. It's not as though a shotgun, at least the kind they're talking about, will have ammunition that is capable somehow of differentiating between a target and a civilian. Like, innocent people will likely die if something like this is deployed inside a council estate, which is kind of like a subsidized housing in the UK. They're crowded, dense areas. I don't I would be interested to hear how the AI is aiming to differentiate between targets and find the right person, because facial recognition is screwed right now. It's clearly got problems.
That's a really good point, Ben. I will say it does require input from the operator to actually deploy any kind of, you know, weaponry on a target. So it's not like the thing could just decide on its own to murder people.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but I think it's specifically, because it's being designed by the armed forces, it's specifically for conflicts essentially that are occurring, you know, in Afghanistan or another country where there's a official, essentially war conflict.
True. Yeah.
But at least for now.
Yeah, exactly. That's how this stuff rolls out, right? Test it out in a country that is a war zone. Right, skirt some of the other legal restrictions that would exist in your country, and then give it to the law enforcement of your home country. I mean, that's what, like, why do you think there's so many MRAPs as part of U.S. law enforcement today? There's a huge business.
Well, it's the same thing that we talked about with that slippery slope with that Clearview facial recognition software, where it's, oh, no, this is only for law enforcement, guys. Don't be crazy, you know? But in the same way that a lot of things like tasers and radar detectors, and we've talked about this, you know, start off as only for law enforcement or only military, eventually, if they're affordable enough or can be copied, which something like this, you know, I mean, I'm surely it's going to be quite expensive, but I can't imagine it'd be as expensive as like one of those massive UAVs, you know, that look like a small airplane. I mean, you know, it'd probably be like tens of thousands of dollars rather than like hundreds of thousands of dollars. That's just my guess. I just picture a world where if you wanted to, you could get your own dual shotgun drone, you know?
People make them. Sure. People have been making, you know, in like the backyard experiment level, people have been making this stuff in their own houses. The thing is, again, the recoil problem. I'm sure you can find plenty of videos where someone's like, all right, we're going to fire the gun I mounted on this drone. And then you see the camera on the drone just sort of go,
smashes into a tree. Yeah. Mm-hmm. This is something that's on the radar of some, you know, human rights organizations. I mean, first of all, a U.S. company, Duke Robotics, recently released an octocopter that can carry heavy weapons.
Fun
and that's to,
say. To,
quote, be used in various military applications, including, here's where it gets crazy, Ben, border patrol law enforcement, drone-on-drone warfare, and counterterrorism.
Jeez. Okay.
Yeah, I don't know. It's, again, slippery slope. And then there's actually Human Rights Watch published a paper recently that, you know, kind of talked about some of the issues behind lethal autonomous weapons, but also mentioned that they, quote, can have military and humanitarian benefits. And that was a paper that was delivered in August of last year at the Convention on Conventional Weapons Group of Governmental Experts. And it referenced the UK research as well. And then last thing, there's an organization.
Yeah, I know what you're
going to
say.
It's not an organization, but it's like, I guess, a movement. It's called
a coalition.
It's called the Campaign to Stop Killer Robots. And that's a thing you can look into yourself if this is a stance that you want to take. They're there for you. And it says, quote, the U.S., China, Israel, South Korea, Russia, and the U.K. are developing weapon systems with significant autonomy in the critical functions of selecting and attacking targets. Because, you know, the next logical step is eliminating the human element entirely. If we believe, it's the same with autonomous vehicles. I mean, those things are death machines. Yeah, potentially. Yeah.
Well, and they.
But I disagree.
Oh, really?
Autonomous vehicles, yeah, man. Look at the math.
No, I mean, potentially. I'm just saying, potentially, a vehicle is a lethal weapon. So,
oh, yeah, sure.
For, I mean, I understand that you're behind the science and the systems, and they do tend to be very efficient. But, you know, you could apply that same logic. If we get far enough along in the technology, someone's going to be like, well, who needs humans anymore? Let's just, the machines know. We've programmed them to know the difference. Let's just let it roll.
Right. The future of humanity is ghost haunting an automated house, right? Where we don't have agency to make decisions and so on. Yeah, the thing with the reason I'm hobby horsing on autonomous vehicles, which I personally wouldn't want one, is that the science is there if the infrastructure is in place and if the majority of vehicles are autonomous, then the highways become much safer. That's true. But then I guess the next question is, how far away are we from someone getting an autonomous vehicle and mounting weapons on that one day and then just setting it on its merry way?
What autonomous weapons?
Yeah. Perhaps. What safeguards do we have in place? We don't. The legislation will catch up after the deaths, unfortunately.
That's right. And another part of the statement from this campaign to stop killer robots says that this type of automation of lethal weapons, quote, shifts the burden of conflict even further onto civilians, which I think is an interesting way of looking at it.
Yeah, so what we were talking about, it's the collateral damage that you can't prevent.
Yep.
With a shotgun or a rocket launcher.
But it's acceptable, Matt. It's within a margin. It's within an acceptable margin.
Yeah.
Yeah. Bullets are dumb.
If
bullets
you get one enemy combatant, then job done.
Mm-hmm. Right. It's kind of like, those quotes you hear every so often in the military that say, we killed, X amount of people. We killed 10 people. We were mainly gunning for this one person, but because we killed that one person, we saved 2,000 people. So if you look at the math, right, and then they start doing that insidious game, then they'll say, really, we saved 9,990 people. You just have to subtract the 10.
There you go.
Which is a terrible thing. But I guess we're going to see these pretty soon, because make no mistake, if there is research like this going on in any country, then the U.S. is doing it as well as a matter of policy. That's like we don't – that's just – our government deciding it doesn't want to have some kind of defense or technological gap.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And it really is just kind of a, it's one of those things that if unchecked could lead to an escalation of this kind of thing, fully autonomous. Because we're pretty confident in our tech. We like a good tech,
Yeah.
And the less, the more we can, eliminate a job if we don't need it, the better, for some of these folks.
Oof. That's a very excellent point. It's a story for a different day. But why does everybody forget? We're not going to go directly to a post-work economy. We're going to go to a post-worker economy. People will still need jobs. They just won't be around. There are a lot of plot twists between us and the utopian world of Star Trek. But there we have it. Thanks for bringing that, Noel. Any last words on this one?
Well, not on that really quickly. I couldn't help myself. This came up when I was looking for stories today, unrelated to anything or even remotely conspiratorial, but maybe. There is a new ebook released on Amazon by MJ Edwards that's called Kissing the Coronavirus. And I want to read you.
Wuhan to Washington, right? Wuhan to the White House.
I want to read you the description real quick. She was supposed to cure the coronavirus. Instead, she fell in love with it. Dr. Alexa Ashington Ford is part of a crack team of scientists tasked with finding the cure to the devastating coronavirus. Little did she know, she would end up falling in love with it in this steamy viral erotica. Kissing Coronavirus is a steamy tale about forbidden love and dark desires come to life.
That's real, and you could purchase that?
Yeah, it's free, absolutely free on Kindle Unlimited, and it's $6 on paperback. But the part that they don't really put front and center is that it's only 15 pages long.
That's amazing. Wow. Well,
sorry, I had to. I couldn't help myself. But that's all I got. I think we can take a quick break from our sponsor and then come back with some more actual strange news.
Hello, and we are back. And for this next story, I'm just going to give credit where credit is due. My wife showed me a portion of a YouTube video she was watching on the night prior to this, and it was on the feed of one Paris Hilton.
The Paris Hilton?
The Paris Hilton, the one. And To be completely honest, this is not somebody that I have thought about or, you know, honestly been looking at anything from for a long time. I guess because Paris Hilton had such a large stardom. What was that? The early 2000s?
Yeah, sure. It was like, yeah, she was palling around
famous
with...
famous for not being doing anything.
Yeah.
Famous for being an heiress.
That's right. But she was always palling around with, what's her face? Lionel Richie's daughter. And they had like a reality show where they like worked on a farm or something, you know? And they were
what does the Walmart sell? Walls? That's one of the snackable quotes.
That's right.
From that era. But yeah, it was... Yeah, I think... people know who this individual is.
It was a golden time for vapid celebrity culture, that's for sure.
We're still in those halcyon days.
It's fair.
You know what I mean?
Yes. And, you know, before you judge Paris Hilton too hard, everybody out there, I would say in those times, that is very much the way I received the message that was Paris Hilton, right? Felt that those feelings were very much mutual. I'm not saying that I'm completely 180'd on her, but what my wife showed me definitely, made her much more three-dimensional, and in a very interesting and heartbreaking way. She released something on YouTube called The Real Story of Paris Hilton. This is Paris official documentary. You can probably just look up This is Paris official documentary. And you can watch it for free on YouTube right now. And again, to be honest with you, I wasn't terribly interested in most of the hour and 45 that exists within that documentary. However, there are a few sections in here where Paris herself and along with several other people, they get together and they discuss their experiences in what is described as a series of boarding houses and institutions that are meant to curb bad behavior, I'm doing that in quotations, that exists within teenagers. And a lot of these specific facilities that are mentioned in the documentary are meant to cater to those children of the wealthy. Really, right. That's what it is. Mm-hmm. If you put yourself in the shoes of a parent, my child is exhibiting behaviors that I do not want he or she to exhibit. And I am, you know, I don't know what to do. I've sent her to these other places, these other educational facilities that don't seem to be working. Now I'm going to send her to this other place that is a whole different breed of facility.
Right, we're not playing around now. It's the newer iteration or concurrent iteration of the old trope of sending a kid off to military school.
That's
one example of this with the same degradations and violations, which I imagine we'll get into.
Yes, let's jump ahead a bit here. Within this documentary, Paris Hilton divulges that she had been through many of these institutions. She had, in many of them, she'd done things like called her grandfather and had him come and pick her up. She would escape by one way or another, sometimes running with a friend or another child who had escaped, running through the wilderness until they were caught. She had essentially done several prison breaks, and then eventually her parents had enough and they wanted to, I guess they just decided to take that next step that we've been describing here. They were going to send her to essentially a prison where children are kept and educated in various ways. And she divulged within the documentary that at 17, she was awoken in the middle of the night. There were individuals from this specific school called the Provo Canyon School. And she was taken from her home forcibly in the middle of the night. Her parents were there watching and crying as it was occurring. And this was a very traumatic event for her. I mean, obviously, right? It doesn't matter who you are. If you have that happen, really traumatic. And once she got there in the middle of nowhere in Provo, Utah, She was kept for 11 months. And while she was there, she, along with the other students, were prescribed medications, pills that were unknown to them. They, you know, it wasn't as though they consulted with a psychiatrist or something, and then they were prescribed a pill, and then there's an understanding or something of these are children, and we will give them the medication that they need, essentially is what the feeling is here.
Or force them to take it
them to take it with the risk of punishment. And
so many horrible things about this. I feel like I know exactly. Okay, yeah.
The concept here is that there were control mechanisms for the facility to use on the children. So mood stabilizers, antidepressants, things that are going to make the children tired and numb, really, so that they aren't acting out in ways that the facility and perhaps the parents see as acting out. There was also, again, alleged by Paris and several other children who had gone through this specific school, PCS or Provo Canyon School, they described physical abuse, solitary confinement, and the one that Paris describes here, which is animated very well, in my opinion, in the show itself, in the documentary, she describes being sent to a confinement chamber for nearly 20 hours where she was stripped of most of her clothes and left in the cold. And when she was in this moment, she describes it as having realizations about her life, about what she needs to do to survive, essentially. And she, in that moment, at least according to this documentary, decides to create the version of Paris Hilton that we all know as Paris Hilton. Her specific speech patterns, the way she was going to live her life, that she believed would be, I guess, interesting enough to make her a celebrity, to be successful. And it was because of this just terrible treatment that, you know, at least according to her and some of her friends and family there, this was the moment that Paris Hilton was born, essentially. The version that we know. I don't know. It's just very, very strange. And she describes a lot of the same things that perhaps we imagined when we discussed Britney Spears several months, or is it months now, weeks? I don't even know how long it was. Like, we don't know everything that someone has gone through when they are a celebrity, right? And we don't know how they got there. And I don't know really what I'm saying here. It's just, I guess in the end, this really did change the way I think about her and made me feel like maybe I was being quite a bit too judgmental early on, even though the actions that Paris was taking when she was very popular on television all the time and the persona that she was projecting was not something that I liked. I don't know.
Yeah, but I see you in that, man. And I think it's something that we're somewhere between encouraged and indoctrinated to do in modern celebrity culture now. Like you're not supposed to think of these of people as living, breathing people with all the flaws, all the horrors, and all the noble components that every human being has. And you're not supposed to think of them as having rights. When you talk about that image, the first thing that pops into my mind, I'm sure a lot of our fellow listeners, is the control that producers have when they curate reality in a reality show. I'm using air quotes, whoosh, whoosh, reality show. And this... this then seems like there's an argument that the public persona people are aware of today is crafted to some degree as a response to abuse. Would you say that's the long and short of it?
I mean, there's certainly evidence to support that, right? You know, my wife, we've talked about this before on the show, my wife specifically works with children who are classified in the state of Georgia as having emotional behavioral disorders, and they are generally children who have been kicked out of one institution or another in order to end up where in the program that my wife is a part of. And I mean, you know, there are obviously HIPAA laws and everything. She can't tell me the full story of any child. She can't tell me really any full details of any child, but we talk more on the surface of things and, you know, categories, and almost like you're saying, almost all of these children have gone through something terribly traumatic, and are you know, and again, I'm not a psychologist. I don't know what I'm talking about. I just know that the commonality here is trauma and then attempting to express and work through those feelings and doing it in ways that I guess society at large views as negative. God, that's vague as hell, and I'm sorry, but that's
no. I don't think so. I think you're spot on, and I mean, to me, it's a matter of like control too, of being able to control one's own destiny, perhaps in a really extreme fashion. But you know, it's an extreme backlash to extreme things that have happened to someone like this. I really, please don't anybody act like I'm being flippant when I use this as an example, but it's like superhero origin stories. You know, it takes something very traumatic to happen to somebody oftentimes for them to make this huge pivot to like, I am going to self-style myself as the antithesis of this thing that I was, that was weak, or that was this version of myself that allowed me to be taken advantage of or allowed me to be a victim, and I'll never be that again. And so I'll like be the most extreme version in the other direction.
Joseph Campbell-esque, yeah, the hero with a thousand faces, right? There is, just real quick, if you guys are okay with it, I would like to share some realities of what's called the troubled teen industry and why those, this is just my opinion, I don't think you should ever send your kids to a place like this. First, there's like zero regulation for a multi-million dollar industry in the U.S. alone. The punishments are ineffective. They don't work. Kids have died in these programs because of those punishments. Like you said, Matt, kids are getting snatched Elian Gonzalez style from their homes. I believe you said Paris Hilton had to call her grandfather, right, to get out. And just being able to get outside communication is quite a coup in many of these programs. They are private companies, yeah, which means they are profit motivated.
Yeah.
And the, like, again, the thing about the methods they use that are brutish and insane is that they are ineffective. Look at our earlier episodes on whether or not torture works. Spoiler alert, it doesn't. And that's what they're doing.
And it's a, I mean, it's a good point, Ben, and I don't disagree with your opinion, sir.
I'm sorry. It's just, again, I'm not a psychologist. I'm not.
No, yeah, it's the same. It's the same industry, deal, right? But I totally agree with your assessment, though. It feels as though they don't work if they are being if the children are being treated like prisoners. And the scary thing is that for decades, there has been thinking within the field of psychology, there's been all kinds of testing that's been occurring to see what would actually benefit a quote unquote troubled teen. And one of the big things that was purported to work really well was something called wilderness therapy and being out in the middle of nowhere, like this place in Provo Canyon, doing hard labor, working with your hands, creating other parts of the facility, actually creating buildings, building stuff, chopping wood, refining things like that, working with equipment and being extremely regimented the way a military would be. And at so many of these places, abuse, terrible abuse, has been alleged by individuals within the facilities. And sometimes, in a few select cases, abuse at the top of the food chain within one of these organizations. And those are few and far between, but when something like that is alleged, it hits really hard. And I just want to put out here, if anyone that's listening has ever been through something like this, before we move on to any of the other stuff, please write to us. Let us know your experience. Let us know if you went to the Provo Canyon protest that Paris Hilton and numerous others just did. They just held a large protest to shut down the school and to possibly even, I don't know, have some other kind of regulations brought forth just on the industry in general. And if you are interested in any of that stuff and you aren't aware of it, I would recommend heading to the website breakingcodesilence.net. That's BREAKINGCODESILENCE.net. There are also hashtags on Instagram and other places where you can join the conversation there. But this is where people are sharing their stories about going through a school like this and what they went through and how they're coping, really. The final thing here is that Provo Canyon School, which is the institution in question here that Paris was talking about, they put forth a statement, and it's from October 9th, 2020. And in their statement, they are saying that the Provo Canyon School was sold in August of 2000, and they cannot comment on operations or patient experience prior to that timeline, which we get it. They're a for-profit institution, like we said. They can't come out and, well, at least it would be difficult for them to come out and apologize or, you know, do some kind of PR move that would make people feel a little better. What they do say is that the school provides, quote, a structured environment teaching life lessons, providing behavioral health therapy and continuing education for youth who come to us with pre-existing and complex emotional, behavioral, and psychiatric needs. That's the official word from the school, and you can check that out at Provo, ProvoCanyon.com, ProvoCanyon.com.
And let us know if you would be interested in hearing a full episode on this industry, which is wildly successful financially. I think we would also want to pay special attention to what's called conversion therapy, which is the use of institutionalization and pretty brutish methods to try to make young people, to try to fundamentally change young people's sexual identity or orientation, which is still, for some reason, still legal. Only 19 states have banned this. I'm counting DC, but yeah, this is a big problem. So let us know if you'd like to hear more about it. And as Matt said, share your stories with us. We'd love to hear them. Now we'll pause for one more word from our sponsor, and we'll head back to the skies. No shotguns this time. Well, we don't know, because whatever's up there is unidentified. And we're back. So this was hard for me to avoid mentioning, because I try not to bug you guys on the weekends, because I'm like, the last thing they need is crazy text from this jabroni. But here's what happened quite recently. Harry Reid, who you have heard about if you follow the U.S. news, was recently in a documentary, and this documentary is called The Phenomenon, from a director named James Fox. Harry says something interesting. You'll recognize him as the former Senate Majority Leader of the U.S. He said that the U.S. government has been hiding key details about UFOs for years and years. Well, this is something that Matt Knoll, the team, and I predicted. It's not like we're reading tea leaves. It was a pretty easy prediction to make. But he goes on in this documentary and says some very choice things. He said, quote, why the federal government all these years has covered up, put brake pads on everything, stopped it, meaning the investigations or the coverage of investigations. I think it's very, very bad for our country, says Reid. He also says that he is aware that most of the research that was conducted, which we know a little bit about, has not yet seen the light of day. He says that there are not only UFOs that the federal government cannot explain, but there's, quote, more than one up there, which is bonkers, right? For this guy to confirm that. He, as Senate Majority Leader, and given his various committees that he was on, he would have access to this information. Like, if this came out in 2019 or 2018, it'd be huge news. But we're in 2020, where huge news is hitting like every 7 minutes.
Ben, correct me if I'm wrong. The involvement that Harry Reid had with the UFO programs was announced a little while ago when that when that footage first came out, right?
Right.
The Navy footage. Because wasn't Harry Reid one of the guys that disclosed that it was an ongoing program?
Yes, that's correct, Matt. He was one of the lawmakers behind that classified program, which has been officially closed. But since he's left office, he's been more and more outspoken about it. I think we all know. Okay, it's like you have a job where you can't officially say stuff. Like, we probably all have friends who, for the bulk of their life, couldn't have social media because of their career. This guy's in a similar situation, right? And your friend retires, and all of a sudden they're a savage on Facebook or Twitter or whatever. And now this guy is becoming increasingly outspoken. I think he's testing the waters. I do want to emphasize, he is adamant that the investigation should prize science and not assume extraterrestrials. But keep in mind, we as a species spend billions and billions and billions of dollars monitoring the sky. And we're mostly watching the sky because we don't trust each other. And history has proven we should never trust each other as countries. But we're seeing things that all these billions of dollars still can't explain, which to me is like a what a time to be alive moment. Can you imagine? We're finding, it's just like Venus. Are we finding alien life right as we close the curtain on life on Earth? I don't know.
That would be depressing.
Yeah. but it's strange though. You would think, and again, we're not the people in charge of the skies, but you would think that with all the money, all the blood, sweat, time, tears, and treasures spent, we, at least in the U.S., would have a slightly better grasp of what's going on. What do you guys think? Do you think we're monitoring our own planes? Do you think those pilots are seeing things that are like Skunk Works products?
Well, I mean, that's, you know, we've talked about it before. It seems as though that is the most likely explanation for most unexplained aerial phenomena. Is that it now?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. I can't remember. So many acronyms, so many different words. I think as we've discussed on previous episodes, that's probably mostly what we've been seeing. If not just someone who doesn't know what types of vehicles are in the air at the time and they see something and it weirds them out, but they don't do any background on whether or not, you know, there's a specific aircraft in the vicinity or something. But there are definitely some strange occurrences that still need to be looked into. And that's essentially what Harry Reid was saying, right? We know that there's something going on. It doesn't matter where it comes from, as long as we're spending money to figure out what it is. Like, doesn't it seem like we should at least spend some money on it? Maybe a little more money? Because it could be bad.
Yeah, and I mean, the magnitude of it, it's like something out of Independence Day or a blockbuster science fiction franchise. There are reports confirmed of an unidentified object in 1967 appearing like out of thin air over a missile base in the U.S., and then coinciding with its appearance, 10 of those missiles became inoperative. I mean, this is crazy stuff. It doesn't matter whether these are extraterrestrials, or let's get crazy and say it's a universe to the left of ours on some kind of weird perpendicular quark chain. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if they're from Poughkeepsie or Peru. There is technology that exists. This is, I think, a nice companion piece to your earlier news about drones, Noel. There's technology that exists that the U.S. may not control or may not understand. I mean, Bigelow definitely has something. The only real argument is what that thing is. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and how much involvement Skinwalker Ranch has, right?
Exactly. Yes.
This is fascinating. Harry Reid, man. Never would have thought he'd be the guy coming forward.
Let's get him on the show.
If he'd be down, but I wouldn't want to just talk about UFOs. There are so many other things I want to ask Harry Reid about.
Yeah. School of America's, why milk came in bags for like just a year or two and then went back to cartons.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. My priorities are admittedly a little skewed. But
other missing kids stuff. It's all good. Really, really cool. So what is it called? Phenomena or phenomenon?
The phenomenon.
The phenomenon. Cool. I'm going to have to watch that trailer.
Yeah. And I have to ask you guys, what do you see, Matt? I feel like maybe you answered this earlier, but what do you see as the most likely explanation? Like if it's US technology, then why does it seem like Reid himself is not aware of it? You know, like what could it be? Because right now this reminds me of Angel Hearts. Spoiler, Mickey Rourke's character is hired to hunt himself as a detective. So what? Are we like chasing our own tail?
Well, it's, okay, to answer the question, first of all, Harry Reid was a Democrat and Senate Majority Leader for a time, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just wondering why he would be in the know about ultra-sensitive topics like this.
Compartmentalized.
Compartmentalized things. Like, why would they ever let anyone in the Senate know about something like this if it were the real program, right? I know that sounds weird.
No, it's a good question.
If it were the real program. It feels as though, gosh, I feel naive even saying this. It feels to me as though if Harry Reid was aware of a program that was monitoring UFOs within the United States, that it was probably the B program or the program that's like the, okay, yeah, we'll let there be something because a few senators and public officials know that there are all these reports and they get calls sometimes. We'll let them have 12 million or whatever it's going to be to look up in the sky and monitor for a little bit.
Okay.
Meanwhile, the two options are it's all U.S. technology and it's all secret, or it's definitely aliens and the military doesn't want the Senate or anybody else to know about it.
Okay. Okay. I dig it. And I like it. I like the idea. It makes sense to me of a dummy program because the best way to prevent people from making progress toward a discovery you want to hide is to provide the illusion of progress toward a discovery, right? And bonus points if it's unrelated, you know?
Joe, I don't know. I don't know. What do you think, Noel?
It's hard to say. I mean, look, I don't know that. You guys both make really good points. Like, it feels like, you know, the level of clearance that this stuff requires, people wouldn't just casually know about it. Like, I don't know.
Harry Reid was like a part of it.
Right, but you're saying that even he wouldn't have had the deepest knowledge of everything going on.
I'm being a little facetious. I don't know. I guess I'm allowing my more conspiratorial brain to come out. But it's at least the secret Senate facing program, right? That's what we're talking about.
Right.
Right.
So it was still secret, but the Senate was aware of it. And I guess to me, it just feels like, I don't know, maybe I've just watched too many movies, man. Maybe I've watched too many sci-fi things, read too many things. It just feels like you wouldn't allow for that if it was real.
Or maybe you've read too many history books, because I think that could totally happen. Look at the CIA was the left hand of the U.S. government making all these moves that the right hand, a.k.a. Congress, was not aware of. You know, I really appreciate the point about compartmentalized intelligence being... So it's a thing we don't really talk about in the U.S. The thing we should be talking about more in the United States is the division and the different, at times contradictory aims of the, what I would call the multiple actual governments. Hmm. And don't confuse this with a deep state argument. What I am saying is that a lot of the power, a lot of the influence, the funding, and the classification of what is or is not secret is squarely the domain of unelected government officials, appointees who exist regardless of which team happens to hold the presidency or the congressional majority. Those folks are able to, unlike, say, a president or unlike, say, most senators, they are able to work on a multi-decade time horizon. They can make a change. They can do something that a politician would be terrified to do because it would get them, perhaps rightly, booted out of office. Yeah. There are two separate things here. And maybe what we're calling UFOs, maybe that's the domain of the people we don't get to vote for.
Maybe they're all just early prototypes of that drone with a shotgun, man.
Or the shotgun where you mount the drone. Getting way too into that idea, but
the drone, the nested drone shooter.
Yeah, exactly. The two unrelated stories I didn't report on. I really wanted to. I'll just give you the headline so we end on a slightly less weird, depressing note. First, Elon Musk is in deals with the U.S. government to make some completely unclean, evil space weapons. That's what he's doing with the Tesla money. Second, France has decided to distribute medical cannabis for free.
Cool.
Heard about that.
Just to like chill people out during all this craziness?
You know.
That's what they said. That was the quote. They're like, everybody to chill needs to people chill out
during all this crazy. Did you guys see the new South Park pandemic special?
Mm-hmm. No.
Oh, I only mentioned it because the pandemic special, quote unquote, is actually Randy's like discount weed deal that he's, you know, that every now and then it makes light of the fact that weed dealers like business went through the roof during the pandemic. And people keep thanking him for, oh, really liking the pandemic special. And it's a key plot point in the whole episode. So he seems, you know, very forward thinking, much like the French.
I'll check it out. Yeah. They're rolling it out for 3,000 people in March of next year. Not too clear on the qualifications you have to have. This may be good or bad news for some of our listeners. You do have to live in France.
Yeah, but no, that's great.
They're not amazing. Delivering it.
I'm just thinking 3,000 people. Think about the population of France, and then 3,000 people get free weed.
And how are they being chosen? Yeah. You know, is it terminal? Are these people with terminal or incurable conditions? There are certainly more than 3,000 of those people alive in a country of that size.
Is there like a, do you have to submit a HIDEA and like the best ones get free weed?
I have never heard the portmanteau HIDEA and I love it. Did you write that?
No.
That is wonderful.
Yeah, that's, I can't really talk about it, but it is a thing. Okay.
That's wonderful. Also, the word portmanteau is itself a portmanteau. That's pretty neat.
I did not know that. That's very meta, Ben.
And with that, we are going to call it a day before the drones break in or before, I guess we can be honest about it. We're probably too old to be locked up in the troubled teen industry, right?
I don't know. The troubled middle-aged guy town.
I think that's just prison.
It sounds an awful lot like getting black bagged.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's exactly what it was.
Here's hoping that today's strange news does not find you getting black bagged. We want to hear from you before we get disappeared. We try to make it easy to find us on the internet.
That's right. You can find us in the usual social media nooks and crannies of the internet where we're Conspiracy Stuff or Conspiracy Stuff Show, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, all that stuff. We'd love for you to join us on our Facebook group. Here's Where It Gets Crazy. Easiest thing in the world. Just name one of the three of us right here or a super producer or two or all of us or just something to make Ben laugh or, you know, freak me out, make reference to my bird phobia or something. And you're in. And we'd love to see you there. Also, you know what? I think we've all been making the horrible mistake of occasionally going on and reading some iTunes reviews. And most of them are lovely and lovely people that are writing about how much they enjoy the show. But there's some awful human beings out there. Don't be one of those awful human beings. In fact, go and leave a nice review to push those mean ones way down the list. We'd really appreciate it. It also helps people discover the show. And it makes us feel good in our hearts.
But we do accept constructive criticism, for yes. sure. We,
constructive we criticism is one thing, but you breathe too heavily, kill yourself is not that. So, yeah.
People tell me that all the time.
People have been making fun of me for my weird voice for my whole life. There's no news. But we do love to hear from you. And Matt, you make a great point about creative or constructive criticism.
I like creative criticism more.
Mm-hmm. Creative criticism. Give it to me in Esperanto. Let's get weird with it. Because you, specifically you, are the most important part of the show. This cannot exist without you. And that is why it makes our day to hear from you. You can also call us directly. We are 1-833-STDWYTK. Let us know what's on your mind and let us know whether we can use your name or your voice on the air.
And if you don't want to do any of that and you want to just, you're old timey, you're old school, you can send us a good old fashioned email. We are
conspiracy@iHeartRadio.com. Stuff They Don't Want You to Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.